from the NCHC.TV studios. This is College Hockey West Live. College Hockey West Live is brought to you by Jesse Ray's Barbecue. For lunch or before the game, the NCHC.TV. Subscribe to NCHC.TV to watch the best in college hockey since 2000. Caesars Entertainment Resorts and Casinos, whether it's Las Vegas or any of our other worldwide properties, an iconic vacation.
Well, welcome in, hockey fans, anywhere that you may be joining us this Sunday night for College Hockey West Live. Scott Strandy with you tonight in beautiful Denver, Colorado. It wasn't so beautiful yesterday, but today, spectacular, as the sunshine was out, the winds had died down a little bit, and the temperatures warmed up into the mid to low 60s, I guess. My co-host, as always, though, is in the big, beautiful palatial estate, now called the Command Center. Surviving an earthquake, getting the backyard reseeded, planted, getting a good view of the bug botanical gardens. Paul Hornstein, life is good for you.
First of all, let me know when you find that palatial estate, because I'd like to hang out there for a while.
I saw some today in Denver.
Did you?
Yeah,
I'm not in Denver, so.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe I had it off a little bit. I did switch over to my hotspot on my phone because I was having a little sketchiness. So if there's a little break up in the action, that's what it was. I was rolling over to the hotspot. But anyway, seems to be, I think we got I got another guest tonight. So I think Nick Maxson's going to join us. So let me plug Nick in, too.
Really?
All right. Yeah. So as we kick off Frozen Four week, Nick.
I was going to say, was there any?
What?
I was going to say, there's really nothing going on this week, so we might as well just take a week off.
Yeah, might as well. Either that or do 9 podcasts in 10 days. How about that?
Okay. Oh, whatever.
Anyway, let's bring Nick in and let him join the conversation. So, Nick Maxson, how are you? Are you ready for a Frozen Four in your own backyard?
Good evening, gentlemen, and yes, very excited that we're back to college hockey in the great state of Minnesota. Not liking the fact that there's no Minnesota team in the mix, but
well, that makes one of us.
Yeah, but at the end, there's the four teams that did make it to St. Paul, very well deserving, should be some good hockey on hand.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the way we're set up tonight, Nick, to roll through things is I've got some sound from Denver. I'm here in Denver and was over at Pioneer practice on Thursday and talked with Coach Carl and a couple of players. And then Stephen Marsh gathered us some stuff from the BU guy, Jack Eichel, in Las Vegas, and also a few comments from Coach Cassidy as well. So we'll get into that. Then we'll talk a little bit about something you probably are – had your eyes on a lot, and that would be the portal. We'll get to that too. Paul hasn't watched it at all.
Nope.
Command Center's been kind of quiet.
Well, look, before we get into any of this, Nick, is, I mean, again, you're much more, you know, you're much more intertwined in the, you know, more, as I like to say, institutional knowledge with college hockey. I mean, I'm only the last few years. You grew up with it. Scott grew up with it. Do you like this all chalk Frozen Four? Are you a fan of that, or is it just because there's so many draft picks in this particular group that it makes it much more interesting?
You know, at the end of it, I like where college hockey is trending, right? You know, at the end of it, I don't mind it. I think the NHL draft picks and the talent that teams around the NHL are looking at to add to their roster. And mind you, these aren't just fifth, sixth, seventh round picks. No. These are first round picks, right? What it's showing is because, and Scott, I think you would agree with me on this, 15, 20 years ago, if you're a player in the U.S., you know, it was what basically going through Team USA Hockey, trying to maybe get into the Canadian Major Juniors, and that was kind of your best route to find yourself as a best shot to the NHL. It's not that same way anymore. College hockey, USA Hockey, I mean, it's been really starting at the grassroots level, has really taken a step forward in terms of developing players to be NHL ready. You know, I'm fortunate here in the great state of Minnesota. We have six Division I programs, all with, you know, really close ties to a lot of the teams in the NHL. So, no, I like it just because, again, the talent that's going to be on display. I mean, you have a 17-year-old, Macklin Celebrini, that is lighting things up. So he's going to be potentially a first overall pick, and he doesn't even have that there yet. He's a 17-year-old. So
right.
I like it. It just shows that the game continues to grow. It continues to get better. And despite the fact that, again, no maroon and gold, the correct maroon and gold, sorry.
No,
sorry.
Wrong.
But at the end of it, it's good to see that the college game continues to get better and attract better talent.
And by the way, those 48 draft picks do not include said 17-year-old Macklin Celebrini and Denver defenseman Zeev Bouyun was supposed to also be a top 10 or top 5 pick this year. Those two guys are not included in that 48.
Correct, they're not, and I would be shocked if Zeev wasn't number 3. Honestly, I think he's that talented. We saw that against my team, St. Cloud State, in the NCHC Frozen Faceoff and the overtime loss. He's a hell of a hockey player, it's going to be definitely a lot of teams in pursuit of him. A lot of teams, unfortunately, won't be able to call his name because I think he's going to be off the board. Like you said, Paul, top 5, I think he might go as high as 3.
Well, I haven't heard that, but I mean, I will concede to, you know, you being a little bit closer and so forth and so on. I mean, everybody assumes Celebrini will be 1, and I can't really see as if I haven't heard anybody say anything differently, but you know, it is going to be a situation where, you know, these guys are just, you know, we're used to playoff games being, you know, 2-1 like Denver played in its regional. And I don't think there's any way. And I'm not saying that these guys can't play any defense. I just don't see it. I just think these are going to be 3 track meets no matter who's playing in what game.
I don't know. And Scott, I'm going to throw this to you because, you know, and I think Denver, I think Denver is the team that's going to say no to that. And Denver is the team that's the patient team that outweighed a defensive first Minnesota State. They're a team that can shut down high flying offenses. They've done it in the NCHC, you know, against high flying teams like your North Dakota's, like even this year, Colorado College. To me, Denver is like a chameleon. I think they can play it both ways. But I think if Denver wants to be successful, they would be hard-pressed to keep it a low-scoring, tight-checking game because those are the types of games that these other 3 that are in the Frozen Four, they don't like to play that way. That's just my opinion. I'm curious to what your thoughts are on that, Scott.
Here's my thoughts. I'm going to play the clip from David Carl right now because he's going to tell you exactly what he thinks of that.
Coach, looking forward to the Frozen Four. When you look at the teams on paper, it could be a track meet. Or it could be 2-1. What do you think?
I don't know. I think every game is so different. It's hard to predict. Obviously, elite offensive players on both sides. But I think, you know, I know their structure is very good defensively. They talk a lot about team defense, as do we. And you don't get to this stage without being good in both ends of the rink. So, both goalies, obviously, to get to this stage, played extremely well. I won't be surprised, you know, either way. I do know it'll be a very exciting game. I think it'll be fast-paced. It'll be entertaining for the fans that are there and watching on TV.
I just spoke with McCade, and I told him that I look at guys that are in the play in my camera all the time, and he was in there for about 15 minutes and in front of the net. And he said, if I need to stand in front of the net for 15 minutes for us to get a win, I'll do it. Is that him?
Yep. He's leading by example, words and actions right now. He's done an unbelievable job. Couldn't be more complimentary of the work he's done. And I think a lot of that is what he's willing to do with his own body and put that on the line. And, just really proud of him and the group. It's his team. The group is following him into battle day in and day out. So that's this time of year, that's what you need. That's what great teams have. And we're really fortunate to have McCade leading the guys into the battle at all times.
Can you yet look at what you guys did at Springfield, 2-2-1 games, and quantify it as you head towards the Frozen Four?
Quantify it? I don't know. I mean, I think it felt good, certainly, to win in different ways and to do it on the road. Out there, it was great. I don't know if we spent a lot of time reflecting on it as we've just kind of turned the page to another excellent hockey team that we need to get prepared for and get ready to play next Thursday. So I'm sure there'll be time for it, but we're certainly looking through the front windshield and not the back.
I've talked with you over the last couple of years about how important 10 is for you. Michigan's there, they're looking for 10. You're there looking for 10. I got a hashtag started now, time for 10. Is it time for 10?
I got to get through Thursday first. So, it's certainly a goal of the program. And I think all of our players know it. We're trying to set a record and be the first program to do that. But we've got a hell of an opponent in front of us come Thursday. Before we can really truly start talking about that.
All right, there you go. David Carl told me straight up. I asked him, I said, it could be a track meet or it could be 2-1. He said it could be either or. So that definitely, Nick, I don't know if that answers your question, but they definitely have an emphasis on defense at Magnus Arena, and they hope to carry that forward to the XL.
And I think, Scott, that's a great approach to take the Frozen Four because, you know, I think a track meet, if you're going to go up in a track meet, with the teams that are in the Frozen Four, I'm not sure Denver comes out on the winning side of that, especially against some of the high elite talent that Boston University has. Not to say that they can't, but I'm not sure if that's the way they'd like to play that game. As you get to, as David Carl mentioned, good teams that can play a 200-foot game, right? I think for Denver, if you're able to adjust and you're able to win in different ways and you're comfortable being in those tight games, whether it's 6-5, 1-0, 3-4, you get it, right? If Denver's comfortable in that position, that's where I think you can get a leg up on the other three teams that are in the Frozen Four. Denver, again, just won this 2 years ago. And they did it in a way that I think a lot of outside hockey fans, casual college hockey fans, maybe didn't expect them to. So what that tells me is that David Carl is able to make those in-game adjustments, that knows the tendencies of his opponent and is going to try to merge that with what his team does well and see if he can come out on the winning side of it to play for, like you said, his 10th national championship for the Denver Pioneers.
4 p.m. See
it. What? You know what time it is? 7:54 p.m. according to my watch.
Yeah, well. you know the that's not Hello, Eastern technology. Time. But, no, yeah. See that's a thing and I'm not going to lie here and if, you know, I wasn't sure Denver could play that way until those two games in Massachusetts. I wasn't sure they could win a game like that.
Well, can I tell you? Really... Can I tell you? I agree with you, and also I think the play of Matt Davis is going to be the difference if Denver's going to advance.
Yep.
He's going to have to continue to play like he did in Springfield. The other thing that I'm going to say with Denver coming into this, they still let me step back. They went into Springfield with a 1,000-pound boulder on their shoulder. After they won that double overtime game against UMass, it fell off to about a 500-pound boulder. After they won the regional, it was down to pretty much nothing. This Thursday when I talked with the guys and the players, it was like, hey, you know what? We're as good as anybody. Everybody believes in us. Everything's all good. But you know what? what I've seen and heard over the last couple of days is, I don't know. And some of this came from Vegas, and you're going to hear Jack Eichel in a minute talk about a BUBC championship game. You got to get there first, dude. And I think if Denver does this, it's going to be on the strength of two players, McCabe Webster and goaltender Matt Davis.
Well, obviously the goaltending matters. And coming into this Frozen Four, if you ranked, at least to the general consensus, the goalies in this of the last four teams, a lot of people would probably put him as four. Now, I don't know if I would say that. That would not be my order, but each of these goalies had to do something to get their team here, even if you're the 31-win BC team.
Can I tell you? I'd put them second because I think from what I saw this past weekend in the regionals, I think that and I didn't even see the number one goaltender, but I saw him on TV, and Fowler is far and away the best goaltender in the tournament. Now, the kid from St. Louis, Barcheski, who plays for Michigan, he's pretty good, but he's not this good. He's not at this level, in my opinion. And BU, their goaltender, Caron, pretty good. But again, I saw some flaws in Sioux Falls. Nick, your thoughts on that?
I'm with you there. If there's one thing that scares me about, Boston College is not just, their top-level talent that they have with, likes of Perreault and Leonard, Gauthier and Smith, but Jacob Fowler. I mean, you're talking about a kid that, won 31 of 37 games, has a 2.2 goals against average and a .924 save percentage. That's just disgusting, right? So you talk about a team that can compete on both ends of the ice when you combine elite skill and ability to stop the puck and have confidence that, even though their opponent may generate grade A chances, he's going to maybe steal you a game. That's the X factor, right? And I do think with Boston College, they do have that X factor in net with Jacob Fowler. And I'm with you, too. I think Denver's goaltending situation would be second. And again, I did see similar flaws that probably you saw down in Sioux Falls with Caron. So, but again, if Darcy Kuemper can win a Stanley Cup and he's not, shall we say, top tier goaltending, but they played a different style of game, right? I do think in the college game, it's still different where I think you still have to have, great goaltending to win a national championship. So with that being said, yeah, I think Denver and BC have the top two goaltenders left in the tournament.
Paul, you with us?
Well, listen,
are you going to give us some East Coast bias?
Yeah, I'm the East Coast bias guy. Yeah, my team is the furthest west in the country. Well, that's not true either, actually. On the continent.
In the continental
anyway.
U.S.
Yeah, so then I'll give you this East Coast. East Coast bias is the four letters that show the games on TV. I'd be curious.
And not NCHV.
No.
Okay, thank you. I want to clear that up before Michael comes on Tuesday.
No, well, they're not the ones showing the games on TV this week.
So, I guess I didn't hear you say this week. So
yeah, and it's a curious question, right? Because you got a Jacob Fowler who just won a gold medal at the World Juniors, playing for David Carl.
You think David knows anything about Jacob and his style?
Well, it might make a difference if they're playing each other, right?
Right.
I mean, they still have to get to that game, but, it's you said it several times over the last couple of years, right? The last time Denver won the national championship, there were two teams there trying to win a championship as their sole focus and two teams that were trying to win, but it wasn't necessarily their sole focus. I haven't gotten that feeling this week.
Nope, any of them. I haven't either. I have not either, and I was on the conference call with the four coaches, as you know, on Tuesday, and I did not get that feel whatsoever. So I think this is a true college national championship. Before we go to break, I want to get in the conversations I had and get you guys' opinion on what you hear from Jack Devine and McCade Webster. So let's jump into that right now. Here's Jack Devine.
All right, welcome in, college hockey fans, college hockey coast to coast. We are previewing the Denver Pioneers as we get set for another Frozen Four. Jack Devine is with me. Jack, he had a really good season, and now we're starting to culminate with another Frozen Four. What's it been like for the last week or so?
Yeah, I think it's, there's a buzz in the building, a lot of excitement. Guys are ready to get down to Minnesota and go hopefully win a 10th national championship.
I saw you guys at Minnesota and St. Paul before for the Frozen Faceoff. I know how bad you guys wanted that trophy. Yeah. You got it. Mm-hmm. But I also watched you guys celebrate and was like, yeah, this is nice, but it's not what we really want.
Yeah, we know the job's not finished. The end goal is a national championship. I think we were definitely happy to win an NCHC tournament championship like that. It was something that no one in the locker room had done before. So I think it's just was a building process for a team, and we can take that experience into hopefully winning a national championship next weekend.
You went out to Springfield. You played terrific hockey. Yeah. Maybe not what everybody thought Denver Pioneer hockey was going to be, of scoring 4, 5, 6 goals. Just talk a little bit, if you can, about what you guys did differently and how you adapted to a 2-1 game and a 2-1 game.
Yeah, I think we showed a lot of growth in our team and our ability to win games. You know, we obviously can play high-scoring offense, score 4 or 5 goals a night, but I think for us, we were tested only being able to score 2 goals each night and only giving up 1. I think our defense was terrific, and Matty Davis was a key part of our success.
Was that a buy-in from not only the defensive core, but the offensive guys as well, getting back and doing what you needed to do to make sure you didn't give them any opportunities?
Yeah, I think everybody played their role there. All four lines did a tremendous job, all three deep pairings. So I think it was awesome to see our group come together collectively and definitely buy in on the defensive part.
This season, really from start to finish, you guys have been battling injuries, whether it be with Matty or the guys up front. How have you guys been able to deal with that?
Yeah, I think we're so deep that we have guys who can step up and play any role. I mean, especially you saw last weekend, guys have been playing bigger roles second half of the season. So it's been awesome, and I think actually Matty, when he came back from his injury, he's done a great job, and hopefully we'll see Massimo here soon, and he's obviously a tremendous player, and he plays a big role.
When you look at your style, and you've gotten better every single year and you've developed, where do you think you're at right now? How much more growth is there in Jack Devine?
Yeah, I think I've grown every year from my freshman year and on to my junior year. I think I've gotten stronger, more confident, and just improved my game in a lot of areas. So I think one big thing is my skating. I think I've made tremendous strides in that, and I definitely think it showed these last few weeks of the season.
How much does that play in your ability to get to open ice and score goals, that skating ability?
Yeah, I think it allows me to create more time and space for myself, and that's a big thing. I also think it helps our team on the forecheck. I think I'm able to get the pucks quicker and disrupt a little more, so I think it helps me personally, but also as a team as a whole.
All right, Frozen Four lies ahead. You have Boston University coming up in your first game there. Yeah. Your thoughts on them and what you need to do? It looks on paper like high scoring, which probably means it won't be.
Yeah, I mean, they have some tremendous players on their team. We know what we bring to the table, but we also know if we focus on our game and if we play to our identity or our team, we will have success and be able to get a win during that game.
Jack, thanks for your time, and we'll see you up in St. Paul.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, Paul, you've heard it. Your thoughts, and then we'll go to Nick.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, Devine is a guy who, you know, we talk about chips on shoulders, and you know, we've been talking about him and his game for a while, and you know, he was a 7th round pick.
But now he's simply Devine intervention.
Oh, geez, stop it!
Oh, God, I threw you off track on that.
Geez, stop it! Oh, I mean, I think that, you know, he's just, you know, one of these guys, you know, even though he's come from the development program and he's one of those guys that, that you just have to have. He's that 200-foot guy, that grinder, that kind of guy that mucks it up, that every team needs to get those greasy goals. You know, he's not the flashy player like some of his teammates. You know, he's not the
what are you trying to do? Pick a fight with him? You know how many goals that kid scored?
That doesn't have anything.
He's flashy, dude. He is flashy.
I don't see him as flashy. I see him as a guy who goes to the net.
Okay, and, Jack, and scores goals. That's Paul Hornstein saying that. I know you're flash, buddy. I know. I've seen him for a long time.
He scores goals, and he does it the way it's supposed to be done.
Okay.
Why is that an insult?
Nick Maxon, what do you see out of that?
So for Jack, I mean, it shows the maturity, right? I mean, as a junior guy, I mean, you said goals, 27 goals, 29 assists, 56 points. Last time I checked, those aren't third line grinder minute type.
No, but points. He's that kind of player, though.
See, there's a difference, though, Paul. I think he's a guy where if you look at, like a Jack Eichel, in a sense, where, you know, the guy's got tremendous skill, but he's also not going to back down from the physical part of the game. I think there are different skill players that play the game of hockey. There are some that like the open space, that don't like to get engaged in the physical battles. Jack Devine's a guy that doesn't shy away from it. So I think he's a nice mixture. And I think Jack said it himself, right? You know, his game is developed. He's worked on his skating. You know, he's a guy that, you know, again, is a later round pick type guy. You know what the statistics are when, you know, you get drafted in the later rounds and you got some work to do. And I think he's put in the work. I think he's a guy that thinks the game very, very intelligently and has got a nice mix of skill set along with, you know, the ability to be engaged physically that the NHL looks for. And that's just a way that he's just rounded out his holistic game.
Okay, I'll take that. Give me a bunch of them. Give me a whole team full of those guys.
Am I wrong on that for you, Scott? Because I think if that's where Paul was going towards, I think that's kind of what it is, right? He's a guy that has the skill and the flash. I think he does have the flash, but also is not afraid to get into those dirty areas and engage in those battles.
Absolutely correct. And Jack, if you're listening, that was Paul Hornstein.
I don't care. Listen, bring it. I don't care.
Anyway, let's hear from McCade Webster. This is a captain who broke a little news with us on Thursday. So here we go. Here's McCade.
Hey, welcome back in, college hockey fans, to College Hockey Coast to Coast. I got McCade Webster with me, the captain of the Denver Pioneers. McCade, I'm going to go backwards because you guys are now going to the Frozen Four. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we're really excited. Obviously, this is where we wanted to be at the beginning of the season. So we're super excited to get off to St. Paul. We're familiar with it, obviously, being in the NCHC a couple weeks ago for the Frozen Faceoff. No, we're extremely excited.
You told me before the Frozen Faceoff, you said this trophy is really important because we haven't won this. I haven't won this one. You won a national championship trophy. Where will the Frozen Faceoff trophy be in your line of accomplishments?
Yeah, I think it's obviously below the national championship cup, it steps down, but it's definitely a really important trophy, and it's one that I won bad this year. I've never won it, obviously been bounced in the first game both years, both of the last previous years. So it's obviously a very, very tough trophy to win. And NCHC is the best conference in college hockey. It's tough. Everyone's playing playoff hockey all year. You can't take a game off. So I'm excited and really proud of our group of what we accomplished in conference play. And now it's getting getting the big one now.
I saw you guys on the ice when you had the Frozen Faceoff, and I thought, yeah, this is kind of different because you were happy, but you weren't ecstatic like most teams are when they win that. I saw you accept the trophy. It looked like it was a personal thing for you. And then I heard your teammates start chanting, one more year, one more year. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that? Because I think you just told some other people that this is it for you, the last two games.
Yeah, I think we have a great group of guys in there that have been awesome. And, you know, like people, it's so easy to be in the position that I am with this group of guys and just how unbelievable they are away from the rink and how professional and dialed in they are. I can't speak highly enough of how that locker room is and how close we are. We're truly a brotherhood and a family. So
means a lot coming from them, and it was a special moment for our team winning that NCHC trophy. But like I said, not being as ecstatic, I think there's still a job to be done.
Okay, two games coming up. You know, the first one at least is Boston University. Your thoughts on playing them and battling them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know too much about them quite yet. I'm sure we'll start to get into it now, but I'm sure they'll be a good team, highly skilled, and yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Final one for you is I can tell who's in the play when I look through my camera lens. And I saw you in that Frozen Faceoff championship game in my camera all the time. I've got more McCabe-Webster pictures than anybody else because you're in front of the net. What was your style? What was that determination in that one particular game?
Yeah, I think just trying to do everything I can to help the team move forward and win. Obviously, just getting to the net front is probably what I'm best at, just staying there and, you know, fighting through checks and trying to get a very greasy one. But, I obviously really wanted that and doing anything I can to help my team. If it's standing in front of the net for 15 minutes a night, I'll do that.
McCabe, appreciate your time. Good luck in St. Paul. Okay?
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, McCabe Webster, one of my favorite interviews. Love talking to that kid. He is just so down to earth and just tells it like it is. Paul, you also heard this one, so your thoughts, and then we'll go to Nick.
Well, right, senior leadership knows what he wants, knows, you know, where he's headed. Was there for national championship number 9. So nothing is... You know, even though this is a young team, which you don't think until you start looking at the roster. You know,
11 freshmen, my friend. They started with 10, added a goaltender. 11 freshmen.
I mean, and a bunch of sophomores, and you were sitting here, and you know, again, he's one of those guys that has done this already, so he knows. He's not. There's nothing that's going to happen this week that's going to phase him, and he'll make sure that as best he can that his teammates stay as unfazed by things as he will be.
Nick, your thoughts on what you heard from McCabe Webster, whose sister, by the way, just won another national championship. She's won one at Wisconsin. She's won one at Ohio State. Now it's McCabe's turn to catch up and keep the male side of the family going.
You know, it's funny, right? When you ask an upperclassman that's got pro hockey ambitions, you know, during this time of the year, and, you know, you can just tell when a player is just enjoying the moment and he's enjoying the ride. That's exactly what I heard out of McCabe Webster. As Paul mentioned, right, he's won a national championship. He got, shall we say, that the trophy he's been pursuing, the NCHC, Frozen Faceoff Championship trophy. And, you know, when you've made that decision, you're comfortable with it, knowing that your college career is coming to an end and you're going to be able to finish that off with one or two more games of potentially hosting another national championship. To me, this is a guy that's screams that he's been thankful for the opportunity, that he's, you know, and just enjoying these last few days, right? We're 6 days away, recording this on the 7th, from crowning another national champion, right? And it could be he is second. It could be college hockey's first, you know, double-digit winner. And so to me, it just screams to me that this guy has had one heck of a run, and he's just trying to, you know, live and breathe it in because for him, there's less than a week of his college career that's left.
Yep, 100% correct on that. He did lead us all to believe that this was the end of his college and hockey career. He said he didn't have a lot of ambition to continue playing. He wants to go out on the pinnacle. He thinks this is the pinnacle for him. I believe he's got work in the real world, if you will, lined up. Could he go on and play professional hockey somewhere? I'm sure he could. But he's comfortable in his skin, Nick. You said it. He's comfortable where he's at and what he's accomplished and what he hopes to accomplish. And I think nobody would be happier to leave the Denver Pioneers with championship number 10. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be exciting, and David Carl said it best too. He's got to win Thursday before he can even get a chance to play on Saturday. Is that true, Paul?
That's the rumor.
Okay. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's come back because we got the other side of the coin. Our own Stephen Marsh dug up some stuff from one Jack Eichel and Coach Cassidy. So we'll play that in just a minute.
It's time to drop the puck on the nation's best college hockey conference. We bring you closer to the action all season long with access to exclusive on-demand content and more than 140 live games. Catch every big goal and clutch save. When you can't be there, we have you covered here. Stream on your phone, computer, or straight to your TV, and don't miss a moment from your favorite team. Subscribe now to watch the best in college hockey at NCHC.TV. If it's NCHC hockey, it's on NCHC.TV.
After a hard day at work or a long week, what's better than good comfort food to put you at ease? At the Spaghetti Shack, we say the answer is comfort food that's made by somebody else. The Spaghetti Shack has taken spaghetti and meatballs, the classic Italian comfort food, to a portable level. ASU alumni owned and operated, the Spaghetti Shack has three locations at 6340 South Rural Road in Tempe, the ASU location at 922 East Apache Road, and 952 West White Mountain Road in Pine Top. For lunch, dinner, or catering as well, call us at 480-687-2485 or order online at thespaghettishack.com.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Banks it towards the goalie. Score.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious.
CollegeHockeyInc.com and follow at College Hockey.
From the NCHC.TV studios, you're listening to ITHSW Podcast, College Hockey West Live.
Yes, it is College Hockey West Live. Scott Strandy with you tonight from beautiful Denver, Colorado, where the wind has died down, the temperatures have warmed up. The sun is setting, has set maybe, and we're talking college hockey as the Pioneers will practice on Monday and Tuesday morning, and then we'll head off to St. Paul. Well, they'll meet up with their three opponents, if you can and will, for the weekend. Paul Hornstein joining me from that big, beautiful palatial estate on Long Island, also known as the Command Center now, where the TVs are mounted, the computers are ready and rocking and rolling. And Nick Maxson is going to be with us all week and helping me do yeoman's duty, as it will be in St. Paul. Okay, you guys heard from the Denver Pioneers. You know what to expect. What about the other side? What about Boston University Terriers? I saw them twice in Sioux Falls. I'll give you my thoughts last. Nick, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the Terriers and how they match up with first the Pioneers.
So first of all, Boston U, right, took a little while to get going in the first game. Mind you, tip your cap to RIT, which came at him hard, and you know, they put up a pretty good fight, but Boston able to just essentially ride the wave, ride the storm, and was able to pull that one away. And then for the Gophers, a different Gopher team than we saw last year. They just didn't have the high-end talent. They've got a young defensive core, tried their best to stick with BU. BU was just too much to them. This is an intriguing matchup, Scott. It really is, because you got a team like Boston University that's got, again, the aforementioned Macklin Celebrini. They've got Lane Hutson on the back end. They've got so much high-end talent up front. But I do wonder, after scoring six goals in back-to-back games, how they're going to fare against a Denver squad that can play both sides and both styles of play. I have in my bracket Denver winning this hockey game. That might shock some people, but I do think that Denver has the ability and the depth to stick with BU, and I think if they can frustrate the Terriers, I think Denver could actually pull this one off. Call me crazy, but that's what I see. I'm curious to know everybody else's thoughts on this.
Well, first of all, I don't think as much as I have rooting interests, so to speak, I don't think any four of these teams winning would shock or should shock anybody. I mean, again, 48 draft picks. Okay, Michigan is the fewest with 9. Okay. BU's game against RIT kind of resembled their season. They started off really slow. People were wondering what was going on. And they made whatever adjustments they had to make pretty quickly. The thing about this game is, you know, when you have a team that's struggling, that is going to play good defense and try to choke you off, you know, both of these teams have guys that can single-handedly take you out of your defensive zone.
Amen to that, my friend. That is 100% truthful.
And, you know, which team does that on a more consistent basis? Probably the team that wins.
All right, let me give you just, and we've played this before. This is from Jay Pandolfo after that victory against Minnesota.
Coach, can you talk to me about the defense in the third? It looks like you guys are packing a little bit more. I believe I counted 8 block shots that period alone, but you know, defensively, it just seemed like taking away a lot of the passing lanes.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that in the second period, they had some zone time on us. They were finding the weak side a lot. So we wanted to make sure we were collapsing a little bit more. They were trying to go low to high a lot and just follow pucks to the net, so we did a much better job in the third. You know, when you're down by a goal or up by a goal in the third period, you expect the other team to push. But I thought we played on our toes for the most part. I think we outshot them in the third period, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a credit to our group. We kind of kept pushing, played on our toes. And when they did have a little push, we were there to sacrifice our bodies to block some shots. So it was an excellent third period by our group.
Jay, same question I asked Jack about Sam and coming back here to play on his home rink, so to speak. As the head coach and as sort of his dad away from home, how much did that mean to you to see him have two good, really good games too?
Yeah, Sam Stevens has been an excellent player for us the last 2 years. You don't win hockey games without players like Sam Stevens. He accepts his role. He's very good at his role. He's a great leader. He came back for a reason, be another opportunity to, you know, play in the Frozen Four and hopefully win a championship. And we knew that he won a championship here, so he knows what it's like to win. So I think it was special for him to come back here.
Sean Davis with USCHO. Coach, obviously you faced a Minnesota team that ended your season last year in the Frozen Four. Was revenge one of the motivating factors for your team tonight, knowing that they ended your season last year, you returned the favor this time?
We didn't talk about getting revenge. We just talked about playing our game, and you know, we knew we were capable of beating them if we get to our game. And you know, we weren't great all night, but for the most part, we got the job done. So it's a new year. You know, we certainly like ending their season like they did ours last year. So yeah, it was great.
Okay, those are just a few comments from Jay. I just thought they were important to throw out there tonight. As we talk about the matchup against DU coming up on Thursday. Nick, your thoughts on what you heard from Jay Pandolfo and his little insight to playing better defensively?
I think more than anything, right, you know, this reminds me a little bit of AIC a couple of years ago. Is when they went up against Michigan, right? Granted, these are two different teams, but the ask is the same, right? And that is, you know, we want to be able to get our lead, but we also want to be able to hold it. We want to take away their big guns. Mind you, with BU, 6 players in double-digit scoring. Denver, a few more, 11 double-digit scorers. So I think for BU, you know, it's going to be more important for them, as much as we cater them as an offensive juggernaut, which they have, you know, some great players. I think they're equally, shall we say, going to be have to be committed to the defensive side of the puck, including getting in shot lanes. As you and I both know, at this time in the matters, defense is what wins you championships. And I do wonder with Denver and, you know, a guy like McCade Webster that you talk to, you know, he's going to be huge in this hockey game, because if you can get pucks through and into the net. Webster's going to be there. He's going to be there for the second and third chances. And for Denver, and really this time of year, I remember when St. Cloud went to the 2021 National Championship game. Assistant head coach Dave Shyak talked about the grease pan goals, right? And more so just making sure those pucks get through. And for Jay Pandolfo to say, hey, this is what we got to do to give us the best chance to win. And that is we got to get into those shooting lanes. We have to sell out. You know, we got to give ourselves our goaltender a chance. That is, to me, a championship formula. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And it more so it just shows the commitment that he has to the 200-foot game and not just putting the spotlight on his offensive firepower that's up front. Because as we know, as the games get more important, the offense becomes that much harder to come around.
Well, let me see if as we sit here and we talk about, I think the one edge that is clearly in the Denver file is experience. Now, do they have a lot of guys that won 2 years ago on their roster? They have a bunch. I don't want to sit here and say the whole roster won.
Eight.
But BU has none.
Eight.
Okay. BU has nobody that's won a national championship. And maybe that gives a slight edge to Denver in this game. Because even though both teams have been to Frozen Fours, Denver's won.
What about my pom-poms? Don't they give them an edge?
Let's hear from Jack Eichel. Maybe we can hear some BU stuff.
Okay, here we go. Let's hear from Jack. Again, Stephen Marsh got in the locker room with the Vegas Golden Knights and got this great stuff. So let's play Jack's clip.
Describe the BCBU rivalry for anyone that doesn't know about it. Well, it's, I can think of a few things some family members have said.
KG, hopefully.
Yeah, I could never say it on here, but it's funny. Like, I'm friends, like, BU hates BC, BC hates BU, but, you know, I had so many close friends that went to BC, like, obviously Noah went there, and, you know, I've had other buddies of mine that went there. It's just, it's an interesting rivalry, obviously, with the schools being a mile apart, a lot of history. I think it just gets ingrained in your, like, DNA as you go to one or the other, that you just hate the other one. Even students that aren't even in athletics, they strongly dislike the other side of it. It's funny, like, no matter what, I mean, I could, my junior coach for the junior Bruins is a BC hockey player grad. Obviously, he tried hard to get me to go to BC, ended up going to BU, but every time I see him, he brings it up to me that I went to BU instead of BC, and, like, he can't even stomach BU. He can't even stomach saying the word, so it's, there's so much history there, and if they were to play in the finals, it would be so great for college hockey and obviously Boston. And, BU's got a big game against Denver, so you don't want to overlook them, and hopefully they can get there.
How were the games against BC different? Sorry, that's the last 1 minute.
Just more emotion. Yeah, I mean, it's it doesn't matter what point of the year you play them. The atmosphere, there's a different energy in the building. First time we played them, I think when I was there, it was at BC we won. And it was an incredible environment, and then vice versa, they beat us at BU, and again, just an incredible environment. I remember as a kid growing up going to those games, BCBU. Real tough to get tickets. Just so much history as a kid growing up, watching the rivalry, and then being a part of it now as an alumni watching it, and it's great. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome, you know, to be a part of. It's awesome for the game of college hockey, and hopefully BU can get it done this weekend.
Do you and Noah have a wager?
No, I don't know. We gotta get there. I got one with Dave, our video coach.
Oh yeah, he's a D.U. guy.
He's a Denver guy, so I got a little wager going with him. Hopefully BU can take care of business the first game and get a chance to play in the last game of the year. It'd be great for him, great for the school. They've had a great year, so they can win two more games and cap it off.
Would you watch with Noah, or would you rather watch it by yourself?
If BU BU played BC, would I watch with him? When would it be?
It's
next Saturday?
Saturday, yeah, Saturday.
We play?
No, bring us off.
So maybe I would watch it with him. Yeah, there's probably there's a likely chance. There's also a likely chance I wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, who knows? I don't know what I'm doing next Saturday. I have a hard time figuring out what I'm doing an hour from now.
That's my favorite line right there.
There's a likely chance that I would watch it with them, and there's a likely chance that I wouldn't. I'm not even sure what I'm going to do an hour from now. Nick, your thought on what you heard from Jack Eichel?
I love the emotions, right? The BC-BU rivalry. I think, you know, for us here in the Midwest, Scott, you can attest to this, you know, for our rivals, you know, Gophers, North Dakota, Gophers, Wisconsin, right? St. Cloud, UMD, CC in Denver, you know, it sounds like when you get schools, literally a two-minute walk, not a two-minute drive or a two-minute flight, you know, that the emotions of that game or that rivalry, you know, holy cow, that's pretty fun. You know, that's the side of college hockey that I like. It's the rivalries. It's you know, the bloods that you don't want to see, but you know you have to. It's always trying to be the last person at the end of the bat. So it's great stuff. But you know, as Jay Pandolfo said, and as David Carls alluded to, you know, these four teams have got a game on Thursday before they can get to Saturday. I wonder what Jack would do if, I'm not sure if he's on social media, but I can only imagine, you know, with all the history and the NHL products that have come from those two schools in the past, you know, if those two do end up meeting in the national championship game, what that would do for college hockey itself, for college hockey on the East Coast, and for those two programs, I think it'd be pretty special.
Well, here's a little historic background. In 75 years, they've only played for the national championship against each other once. That was back in 1978. BU beat BC 5-3.
I was a young man then. That's when I developed my hatred for... I'm kidding, but yeah, I do remember that.
Well, that makes one of us.
1979, the Minnesota Gophers won it on a goal by one Neil Broughton, who I understand needs to fix his facial hair, according to Paul Hornstein. But anyway,
dude, no, home. Now listen, we love Neil Broughton. You know, he will be on the all-time great. You know,
go ahead and say nothing will it do with players
win that gold medal. You know. Nothing will ever top that. But I don't know if you saw the picture, Nick, but you can't have your mustache be one color and your beard be another color. It's one thing if they're mixed.
But you can't have one. I'm going to shave right now.
No, don't. I don't want you to shave. I want you to keep growing it.
Here's my thoughts on that. He's Neil Broughton. He can do whatever the frick he wants. So
that's right. He's Neil Broughton, and we're not.
Pretty much.
All right. Let's get one more take on the Frozen Four. This one from Coach Cassidy with the Golden Knights. Again, Stephen Marsh doing a great job for us getting that. Stephen, I don't know if you've seen on the chat line, but he said they were getting ready for a plane to Vancouver. That's what he was doing an hour from that time. So. Anyway, here's Coach Cassidy.
I followed it because I got friends at BU and BC. You asked me who's gonna win or any thoughts on it? General conversation. I'm trying to think who is Michigan. Is Brisson, right?
Yeah.
BC is Hannafin. BU is Jack. Denver. Oh, yeah, Rogo. Yeah, well, he's always yapping about Denver. So that's like, oh, we're playing Trevor Moore tonight from LA. He's Denver and this and that. Everybody. So he's a proud alum. I am familiar with BU more because I coach with a couple of those guys in the staff. Julie attended school there, and then so did a lot of guys from like at McAvoy when I was coaching in Boston. Coyle, I think, was he BU too, right? Someone know that? Yeah, Michigan, not as much. We haven't had a lot of Michigan guys, I don't think. Anyway, I don't know. Huh? Are you a Michigan guy or BU? BU? Yeah. 60s?
The original. It was no roofs to set up the tents.
Coach Cassidy getting a few yucks in there, if you will. But when you heard this, guys, when you hear this from Vegas, and Stephen, again, a great job of getting the stuff for us. When I listen to that, I'm going like, guess what team is being overlooked in this? It's the Denver Pioneers, right?
Well, okay, yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm Ralph Cox. I'm from wherever. Not going to get me hit.
Nick, you get that same feeling that maybe the Pioneers are being overlooked a little bit here?
I think they're overlooked because, Scott, they're not on one of the other two coasts.
Maybe. People forgot about them here at in the middle of the Rockies?
Well, it's flyover country, right? No, I'm kidding. I said that coming from Minnesota. We're definitely in flyover country, so I can say it. There is the East Coast bias. I hope at one point that we do get a West Coast bias, and then maybe a Midwest bias or a Central bias, whatever you want to say it, right? I think Denver is getting overlooked because when you look at Michigan, you look at BC, you look at BU, they've got, shall we say, the star power, the name power, right? You know, Denver's got Jack Devine, they've got Zeev Bouyam, they've got some guys that are known, but do they jump off the page? Do they get the national attention? They really don't, especially in the casual hockey circle. So I do think they're being overlooked, Scott. Paul, I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
Well, again, there's a bunch of combinations, right? Like BC and Michigan are big giant schools. They're known brands, not just in the hockey circles, right? BU, as a blue blood, gets recognitions, big time recognition in the hockey circles, and they're in that cluster there with, you know, and every year, you know, a lot of hockey fans that are not necessarily college hockey fans, everybody's heard of the Beanpot. They may not know what the heck it is, but everybody's heard of the Beanpot.
Came up with the name of that, honestly.
Okay. But I mean, everybody knows what that is.
I see it's Bernie. I think it's Bernie.
No, Bernie's been there for the 75 years of NCAA hockey, right? So, you know, and they've, again, you know, when you sit there and, yeah, a bunch of guys from Minnesota and Boston, that'll work. There weren't a whole lot of Denver guys on that team, even though Denver's been a blue blood for as long as everybody else. Right? So when you think, or when you kind of hit the casual fan, they would probably tell you that they know the least about Denver just because it's a smaller school. It's probably smaller in enrollment than BU, and I haven't looked, but
well, here's my point.
And it is kind of isolated.
Yeah, here's my point. I can't even fathom having BC and BU a mile apart. I mean, that just, every time I think about that proximity and the number of players, talented players that play there, I get that. I get everybody wants to see that. But then when you hang out at Denver for a little while, you go like, you know what? Are they frustrated? Was David Carl frustrated with the NCAA and how they ended up in Springfield and everything else that went along with it? Yes. But you know what he did? He channeled that, and he channeled it with his players. And he said, we'll play anybody, anywhere, any place, anytime, anything. And he meant it. And he's using that to propel his team to maybe a Thursday victory and maybe an opportunity to win number 10. Nick?
Yeah, I think so. You have to find that extra gear this time of year, right? You have to have something that you're driving towards, and not just the national championship, but you got to have that controlled emotion, right? And I think for David Carl, you know, and maybe on the outside looking in, maybe we make more of a bigger deal of, you know, the regionals and how the committee makes their decisions. I still think they just flip a coin or roll a die and just call it a day. That's just how I think it actually happens. But it wouldn't surprise me, honestly. But at the end of the day, right, you know, you have to be able to, and I think one thing that David Carl does well, and this is coming from Brett Larson, who I had a very in-depth conversation with today, actually talked about David Carl with him, and he mentioned that, you know, he's a guy that connects with his players. He knows, you know, the temperature of the room. He knows how to communicate. And I think, you know, one thing that Carl can do in those situations, say, oh, okay, we wanted to play close to home, and now we got to travel all the way out east. You know, as you and I both know, or all three of us know, that the travel part of it, you know, to us as fans, it's not a big deal, but, you know, to the players and, you know, hauling all the equipment, that's no small task. And he's able to find a way to take that emotion that may be a negative and turn it into something that can be a positive, right? So I think for David Carl, absolutely. Just his coaching style, and just, you know, again, he was a USA Hockey gold winning World Junior coach for a reason, right? I think he knows how to get the best out of his players. He knows how to construct a team that can beat anybody on any given day. And I just think he knows how to push, just like Herb Brooks did, right? Push the right buttons and push them at the right times in the right way. I just think that's just a sentiment and a compliment to just how good of a coach he actually is.
Paul, was that tonight?
Well, it's every night, but okay. You know, as I sit here and just to kind of backstop the discussion, as I sit here and I go through the history of guys that played at Denver, I mean, outside of the guys I know specifically because they're connected to the Islanders. I had no idea, and I just looked at something.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you just bring the Islanders into this conversation?
Don't I always? I mean, I did not know the Dineen brothers played at Denver. I did not know Glenn Anderson, who won a million Stanley Cups, played at Denver. Okay? I could probably list off the top of my head a million guys that went to the other three schools that played in the NHL. But and we're sitting here. As now, obviously, guys like Bobby Brink and some others that have been, you know, on my radar in the last four or five years.
Bobby the Blur to you.
No.
Bobby the Blur,
no.
Brink.
No. But, you know, those kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those guys have, you know, obviously kind of been under the on my radar. Like, I didn't know Marty Howe went played at Denver. Did you guys know that? Because I just saw it.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
Well,
so,
you know what?
I mean, that kind of.
Let me get a hold of Ron Nabenbauer and have him bring you up to speed. I sent you a whole bunch of stuff today.
Yeah, I know.
So
I don't
get up to speed on the Pioneers. So, do you need me to have Ron give you a list of all the former Pioneers that have?
Well, no, it's in front of me. I'm just trying to. You know, give people an idea what we're talking about. You know, we don't want to leave out our buddy Swaggy P, who is coaching
great,
at CC.
The one, the only, Peter Menino.
But, you know, went to Denver. So, I mean, this is the point, right? I mean, this is where, like I said, off the top of my head, I can probably give you a half a dozen guys from the other schools from any point in history, whereas the Denver guys, unless they're in the last 4 or 5 years or connected to the Islanders, I wouldn't know.
Okay. I'm going to run over 7 more minutes, and I'm going to give you guys a chance just to give us your thoughts on the portal. I'm going to start with my thoughts and then let you guys finish it up. I think it's got to change. I think it's got to change from a lot of different perspectives. When you're in the portal 2 times in 5 years and 4 years, as a couple of coaches have told me, that's not about your teams, that's about you. So I think that part of it's got to change. I also think it's really got to change from the coaching end of it, because I think the coaches are now going out and recruiting players and getting firm commitments. Like, not that they didn't before, but I think right now they're saying, like, okay, where do you see yourself in 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years? Because I don't want to spend my time and effort on you at the University of Denver and see you end up at North Dakota. in our same conference. I don't want to work with you, get you up to speed, and then see you go somewhere else. So I think it's got to change. Nick, your thoughts?
It's got to change, but I'm not sure what the solution is, Scott. Because you got to look at this from both sides, right? You got to look at even just from the recruiting.
Darn it, I thought you had the solution. That's why.
I know, right? When I think I do, I'm reminded very quickly that I don't. Anyway, no, but you know, when you're especially with the recruiting rules, and you know, you're talking 16, 17 year old kids, sometimes you know 19, 20, they're playing junior hockey, late bloomers, as you know, St. Cloud, that's kind of their bread and butters to get those kids that you know maybe don't get looks in their high school career, but you know, blossom in the in junior hockey. It's a balance, right? And I know, I don't know how we find the balance of, you know, for the athlete who I do believe has a right to be able to choose, you know, where they want to play. At the same time, like you mentioned, what's it in for the schools who have already limited resources, who already are investing the time and the energy to, you know, go out, have these conversations, to meet the families and to make their pitch, and you know, only to have it essentially go out the window in a year or two. And to what Scott Sandlin at UMD has said very pointedly, and I don't know, Scott, you got a chance to listen to his season ending press conference.
I did. So did Paul.
And yeah, it was, I think he was very pointed, and I think he's absolutely correct, right? It's going to, you know, with the NIL money that I think has some part of this, I also believe that, you know, unfortunately, you know, I think, he almost said the quiet part out loud. You know, you can sense that there's conversations having with players and maybe other programs that would make it seem to believe that once that player hits the portal, then within 24 hours they're committed. That there's where there's smoke, there's fire. We'll put it that way. And really, what this affects is the smaller schools, right? So you're talking, like, look at what Northern Michigan has. They almost have their entire roster gone right now. Bemidji State's losing a bunch, you know, just from their good season. So I don't know. I think we all can agree we don't like what we see. But what is the solution? I don't know what that is. I'm not sure what that's going to look like. But it's either way, it's not going to be an easy solution. And, you know, the big thing that I hope is, you know, whether it's from the player's perspective or the team's perspective, right, is when they're going out there and they're doing the recruiting to the high school kids or maybe the junior kids, that, you know, they're having the open, honest conversations and, you know, the fit is there. But at the end of the day, you know, you don't really know what you have until you're in the program, you're fully immersed. And, you know, I know that there's good reasons why a player would choose to leave a program. Maybe they want bigger minutes. Maybe there's just not a cultural fit, whatever the case may be. So I think it's good in that regards, but over 300 kids in the portal doesn't sound, and we know college hockey, you know, by and large part of it is a very positive developmental league and good for off ice development as well as a person. I just don't know how you fix it, but there's definitely some change that has to happen for sure.
Well, Nick, and I don't know if you've heard me say, you know, these things. One, I think this being the last year of COVID players will shake this out a little bit. I definitely do not like you, the fact that these guys announce that they're in the portal and, you know, less than 24 or 36 hours later, they're already announcing, because we know those conversations are going on. I can relay stories that people have told me that, and I'm much further away from it than you guys are, that, you know, these guys are going into the portal already knowing where they're going to play. Like, no, that, you know, if you had a specific reason for transferring to saying I'm going to transfer because I'm going to get closer to home because there are some family illnesses, I can live with that. And obviously you have to have the same rules for everybody, but I mean, you know, people are reporting that so-and-so is going into the portal. And the second half of that report is, and they're expected to go too. Well, how's that? I mean, seriously? Maybe it's a little different now if a couple of weeks into this that you might go in knowing where you're going to go because the portal's been open for a week and a half now. But that was certainly wasn't the case on March 31st.
Well, and to that point, and I'll kind of put a cap on it with this, but to that point, the service academies, Paul, you and I have talked about it. The service academies get really frustrated because we know how hard it is in Atlantic hockey to get a tournament berth. The only way you really get in is if you win your conference. So when you have a couple of really good players and you move them on and you go like, hey, we trained you for 2 years. And then all of a sudden your junior year, you take everything that we gave you and you go ahead and move on to a team within our conference. I mean, that's the part I think that really upsets the coaches, and I think other guys, I mean, we look at TJ Sempfenfelter as a good example. I mean, he's a team player, but he's also about knowing that if he wants a career as a goaltender in the NHL or be, you know, AHL or wherever it may be, he needs a bigger spotlight. I get that. I don't have a problem with that. But if you're just jumping ship to jump ship, that's where I got a problem with it. And as a college athlete in 1980, it was nearly impossible to leave your college. Tough luck. That's what they told you. Tough luck. You signed on the dotted line. You're here, baby.
Yeah, well, I leave goaltending out of this discussion, mostly because it's the only position where there's really only one player. Okay, and they have to make the decisions that are best for them. Guys have, they want to play. And, you know, there's a bunch of, this list is probably about 20% goalie. And they're all shuffling around trying to play. Because there's only one position,
Only one net, baby.
Only one net.
All right, Nick, give us a final word on this one before we say goodnight.
You know, here's something interesting, too. So for last year, right, there were 291 players that entered the portal. 75% essentially transferred to new Division I programs. Almost 10% went down to Division III. 5% turning pro. 5% never going anywhere. So 5% of 300, do the math there, right? It's about what?
Hard.
That's tough. 3% roughly went back to their current team, and then another percent and a half went to an ACHA squad. So, you know, it's tough, right? So out of those 300 plus players, 75%, you know, what's what, 250 of them roughly?
Ish, yeah.
It's they find new homes, right? And I think that part is good, but it shows you also too that with the college hockey season, new freshmen, new recruits, just with the NCAA and the NIL especially, I think the players really feel like they have seized control of themselves and their athletes as a development tool, as you know, they can kind of pick and choose. And I think there should be some of that. I do think, however, there should still be, I'm not sure, a
some
limit,
limits.
Maybe a two, something, because again, at the end of it, and I'll finish with this. I look at St. Cloud State, and I look at, you know, they're primarily a Division II school. The only Division I programs are both men and women's college hockey. That's it. And you think about the financial situation that St. Cloud is in. I was asking Brett Larson earlier today about some of the proposed arena renovations and more so the ice plant. It's like 10 years past its due date, Scott and
right.
Paul. And at the last second in the Minnesota legislature, it was pulled. So they're in a situation where if that ice plant goes down, from what I'm told very directly, is right now the plan would be to go to essentially the high school arena,
ugh,
which isn't going to work, or they would have to drive in a truck. So me saying all this, what I'm trying to say is, you know, when you've got schools like St. Cloud, Bemidji, Lake Superior, you know, these smaller schools that invest their limited resources into these players. St. Cloud with Leo Gruba is probably a really good, really recent example of this. And they flip a commitment even before they step on campus, or they spend a year and they go somewhere else. That's tough. Right. So I there has to be some type of help with the schools in this. I don't know what you can, but the world that we live in, the NCAAs right now, the athletes have the control, and I just don't see it going back the other way. I just don't. I think there's a runaway train, and until someone pulls the trigger and is the whistleblower in terms of like tampering, you know, the smoke where there's fire, then that's the only time I see where we may actually revisit this from an NCAA level. But until then, it's the player's world, and we're just living in it.
Yep, good final word. We've got a whole week of discussions of NCAA hockey. We hope people will join us either live or on the download as we now approach 53,000 downloads, something like that. Nick, thanks so much for spending time with us tonight. We're going to have a great week. I want to shout out the NCHC, Michael Weissman, right now, and let them know that Michael did provide us with some garb. So we'll have some new shirts and things to promote the NCHC, the best conference in college hockey. And Paul, take it away.
From the NCHC.TV studios, College Hockey West Live has been brought to you by Caesars Entertainment Resorts and Casinos Worldwide. It's where the action is, in the resort or in town. Jesse Ray's Barbecue, the best in barbecue Las Vegas style, at 308 North Boulder Highway in Henderson. For the NCHC and NCHC.TV, subscribe to NCHC.TV and catch all of the action from the toughest conference in college hockey. The Tag Creative Group, search T. Grand Rudd on Redbubble.com and let us help you design that one-of-a-kind gift for you or someone special. College Hockey, Inc., your NCAA hockey resource. The Caesars Sportsbook app. Download the app where available, but please play responsibly. FedEx, simplify your business shipping with FedEx, the official package delivery company of Ice Time Hockey West. And by Liberty University, over 700 programs of study to help you impact your community on and off the ice, strengthen your faith at our state-of-the-art campus. See us at liberty.edu. College Hockey West Live is live every week on the Podbean app and available along with all of our weekly podcasts for download at your favorite podcast platform. Search ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. That's ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. Subscribe, rate, and review the shows, or just tell a friend to help others find the podcast. College Hockey West Live and all of our weekly podcasts are part of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com network.
Very well done, my friend. Our thanks to our own Stephen Marsh for getting into the college scene. We're breaking Stephen. We're going to bring him into the college scene now with some of these players that are making the moves. And good stuff from Vegas and from Jack Eichel and, of course, Coach Cassidy as well. Our thanks to Nick Maxson, who's going to be locked up with me, lockstep pretty much the entire week, pretty much from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So Nick will be joining us and giving us insights on what he hears and sees. For those wondering, I have the Denver Pioneers and the Boston College Eagles. Nick has got the Boston University Terriers and the Michigan Wolverines. Paul Hornstein has got the entire thing in the palm of his hand in the command center.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, we'll say goodnight with little Roger Klein, the Peacemakers, De Niro. Join us tomorrow night again for more discussion. Tomorrow night, the focus is on BC and also on the Michigan Wolverines. Good night, everybody.
Good night.